From Brennan to the Boca Chiel, from Lummi to La Push, and from the lordly Sawduck to lovely Duckabush. From Samish to Sammamish, Suquamish to Quilicene, the climate is so friendly, it's a land that's evergreen.
Hello, and welcome to the History of the Evergreen State podcast. I'm your host and producer, John C., and thank you for joining me today for episode 130, Stuntman Yakima Canut. In the little town of Colfax, on the 29th of November, 1895, Enos Edward Yakima Canut was born on his family's ranch. He became a rodeo star and famed cinema stuntman. After traveling west in a covered wagon to Oregon, his paternal grandfather settled in the Palouse and established a ranch near Penawawa Creek in the Snake River Hills, where he raised sheep and cattle. It had wheat fields and pasture land, as well as 30 acres of orchard, which produced cherries, pears, prunes, and watermelons, which were shipped to market in Lewiston, Idaho, by sternwheeler from the surrounding area. Enos Edward Canut was given this name in honor of two uncles, one from each side of the family. It is believed that his mother, Nettie Ellen, was of Scottish and Irish ancestry. His father, John Lemuel Canut, was derived from German and Dutch immigrants, and he was born in the United States. Enos had four siblings, two elders, Alexander Hamilton and Sally Treen, and two younger siblings, John Maceo and Anna Adeline. Canut's father was elected to the state legislature when he was a young child of just a year old. A few years later, he campaigned for Republican governor candidate Alfred E. Meade, and after the Republican won the election in 1905, John Canut was assigned to the position of state oil inspector. Canut and his siblings then ended up attending Green Lake School, which is now located within the Seattle city limits, but was then still a suburb of Seattle. The family was forced to return to the ranch after his father had a disagreement with the governor and resigned as a result. Following that, Canut does not appear to have acquired any other formal education. Later in adulthood, he claimed that he couldn't recall a moment when he wasn't riding horses. Besides swimming, he also spent a lot of time hunting and trapping mink, muskrat, and coyote, earning a small reward for each coyote pelt. He began breaking his first horse when he was 11 years old without the knowledge of his parents, and he was overjoyed with his first ride on the wild animal. His frightened parents intervened, but not before the horse, appropriately named Buck, had already trampled through the potato crop and into the house. The punishment was meted out by his strict father, but he had already made up his mind about his future career as a bronc rider well before the incident occurred. His parents were disinterested in his chosen profession, so he practiced in secret at the ranch of a man who provided bucking horses for the Whitman County Fair. Canut attempted to win $50 at the fair when he was 15 years old by riding a horse that was particularly difficult to ride. Unbeknownst to him, his father was in the audience, and he humiliated his son by yanking him out of the saddle in front of the audience before he had a chance to demonstrate his abilities to the rest of the crowd. The audience, maybe inspired by the youngster's courage, gave him a round of applause. During the next year, when Canut was 16 years old, a local rancher offered the senior Canut a $100 bet that his son could ride and keep his horse, which had previously refused to cooperate with anybody attempting to ride him. After realizing his son was serious about bucking broncos, John Canut agreed, but warned him that if the horse threw him, his bronco riding days were over. A large local crowd gathered at the alfalfa field where the ride was planned to take place, and young Canut gave a fine account of himself. His parents appeared pleased with their son's performance and relented in their opposition to his chosen profession. Shortly after, at the 1912 Whitman County Fair, he made his rodeo debut, taking first place in the bronc riding competition on a horse named Little Spokane. In 1914, he competed in his first major rodeo in Walla Walla. It was there that Canut reconnected with a well-known horse breeder he had previously met and respected. As a Nez Perce Indian, Jackson Sundown was born Wayatona Tusits Khan, which approximately translates to Earth Left by the Setting Sun. He fought alongside his uncle, Chief Joseph, in the last of the Nez Perce Wars in 1877 and was claimed to have three bullet scars as a result of his battles. When Sundown won the World Bronc Riding Championship in 1916 at the age of 53, he cemented his place in rodeo history as a legend. The Walla Walla Rodeo featured a new event that had never been tried before. When Canute observed it closely, he decided to give it a shot at the Pendleton Roundup, which was coming up soon. Bulldogging is a Wild West stage act that was devised and named by famed Texan African-American cowboy Bill Pickett. Pickett was originally depicted jumping off a running horse onto a steer's head, grasping its horns, bending the steer down to the ground on its side, then biting its mouth and throwing his fists in the air. During the next week, Canute traveled to the Pendleton Roundup, where he earned the nickname Yakima due to his association with a couple of teenage cowboys from the Yakima, Washington area. Soon after they had shared a bottle of Old Crow with them, a newspaper photographer captured Canute flying through the air above a horse before crashing to the earth. Canute was recognized in the caption as Yakima, and the nickname, which was sometimes abbreviated as Yak, stuck. When Canute realized how little he had been drinking, he made a commitment to reserve what little drinking I had done until after the contests. After his death, a friend in Colfax recalled that Canute had resided in the Yakima Valley during his youth and had been promoted at rodeos as the Yakima Kid during that time. So it's not able to be proven, but if his friend is saying it, there's probably a chance that there's a little truth to it. The Pendleton Roundup had its humble beginnings as a 1907 fundraiser for the town's struggling baseball club, but by 1914 it had grown into one of the greatest rodeo events in the country, with an estimated 40,000 spectators. That year, it featured hundreds of Umatilla, Sioux, Yakima, Nez Perce, Blackfoot, and Shoshone tribal members drumming and performing ceremonial dances, a stagecoach race that culminated in a spectacular pileup, trick riding, men's and women's relay horse races, roping contests, and a pair of extra-large steers imported from Mexico for the bulldogging competition. Canute's bulldogging debut began with a leap onto the steer from his horse, which resulted in the steer being knocked over. Afterwards, he was carried around by the steer while holding on to one of its horns, with the steer eventually pinning him down with an ingenious half-Nelson move. However, even if it wasn't quick enough to win, and Canute's bronc and bull riding didn't earn him much money, he'd made his big-time rodeo debut and earned himself a nickname that would last a lifetime. This appeared to be acceptable to Canute, who was claimed to have disliked the name Enos from the beginning. He was sometimes mistaken for a Native American because of his name, and he sometimes played along with the misconception, assigning himself to various tribes. The following year's Pendleton Roundup was just around the corner, so Canute went to work training horses to be sold to the French cavalry in their ongoing fight against Kaiser Wilhelm, while also working out by doing push-ups to get in fantastic form for that year's roundup. In 1915, he and a group of associates traveled by horseback from eastern Washington to Pendleton, where he competed for the second time in his career. He began to garner a little bit of a reputation as a skilled bronc rider and bulldogger during this period. That year, he finished second at Pendleton and took first place in a slew of other minor competitions. In 1916, he entered into a contract with the management who, in exchange for a share of his winnings, funded his costs while competing on the rodeo circuit. While attending the Sheepshead Bay Stampede in New York, he met rodeo enthusiast Teddy Roosevelt, and while riding in the rodeo parade in Kansas City, he and his friends peeled off on horseback and rode up to the bar of every saloon they passed, receiving free drinks everywhere they went, which was fine until someone's horse hilariously became stuck in the revolving door of a large hotel. Canute met Kitty Wilkes, a tough little cowgirl, at the 1916 Pendleton Roundup, and the two became fast friends. She weighed less than 100 pounds and couldn't even reach his shoulder with her cowgirl hat on. She had previously won the National Ladies Bronc Riding Championship twice and had been crowned the all-around champion cowgirl at Pendleton for her performances in bronc riding and relay racing. In 1917, they tied the knot in Kalispell, Montana. Yakima Canute won the bronc riding event in Walla Walla in 1917, as well as the Police Gazette Championship belt, which, at the time, was considered the most prestigious prize in rodeo for the all-around cowboy championship at Pendleton. Canute traveled to Spokane in early 1918, just after the United States entered the First World War, where he enlisted in the Navy for the remainder of the conflict. He then proceeded to the Puget Sound Naval Shipyard at Bremerton. According to him, he'd always wanted to see the world through a porthole, and he was also interested in getting away from his volatile home life. The honeymoon had gotten off to a rocky start when the bride threw a fit at the groom, cursing him for arriving at the altar hungover and with a badly bruised face as a result of a barroom slugfest with a lumberjack at his bachelor party. Sounds like quite the party. The groom was quite apologetic, but the bride remained adamant. Later in 1918, he was granted a leave of absence from his naval duties to compete in the Pendleton Roundup and defend his championship. After failing at bronc riding and bulldogging, he received disciplinary action from the Navy for donning his white uniform, complete with bell-bottoms and midi shirt, while participating in the events. After returning to Bremerton, he came down with the case of the Spanish influenza, which resulted in him bleeding profusely from his mouth as he laid on a cot in an armory with hundreds of others. His vocal cords were permanently damaged, resulting in a weak and scratchy voice that he could no longer control. Canute returned to civilian life and his rodeo career in 1919 after serving his time in the Navy. When his wife, now known as Kitty Canute, was able to go back on a horse after a bad fall and finish a relay race with a cracked rib, she was applauded by the crowd at the Calgary Stampede. In Los Angeles, while competing in a rodeo, Canute met movie star Douglas Fairbanks, with whom he played badminton and to whom he presented several fancy mounts, which are spectacular ways to leap on a horse, that Fairbanks later went on to use in his films. He also got acquainted with some of his cowboy pals who were now working on film projects. After much deliberation, he opted to spend that winter in Los Angeles. After making a new friendship with cowboy star Tom Mix, he was hired as an extra in his films, where he also performed stunt fighting and horsemanship demonstrations. While in L.A., Canute also divorced his wife Kitty in an uncontested divorce. When the 1920 rodeo season began, Canute was back on the road, racking up more victories and accumulating more trophies for his collection. During his rodeo career, he was awarded the World's Champion All-Around Cowboy title 5 times, and he was eventually inducted into both the Cowboy Hall of Fame in Oklahoma City and the Rodeo Hall of Fame, which is affiliated with the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum in Fort Worth, Texas. By 1923, he had established himself as a cinematic cowboy, starring in short films with titles such as Branded a Bandit, The Ridin' Comet, and A Two-Faced Sheriff. He had already performed some uncredited cinematic stunts in past films, so this was really nothing new for him. Now, he was doing his own stunts, and, unlike previous movie stars, he also served as a stunt double for a few of the other cast members. By 1928, however, motion movies were talking, and his acting career was done as a result of damage to his vocal cords as a result of his bout with the Spanish flu. Canute described himself as sounding like a hillbilly in a well when he first heard a recording of his own voice for the first time. Canute had fallen on hard times and was deeply in debt, so he turned to stunt work whenever he could. He later stated that, after deliberating over how he could make a livelihood in this new environment, he consciously determined that the motion picture business lacked excitement and thrills, and that, as a result, a whole new arena in the action end of motion pictures appeared before me. Yakima Canute, according to Charlton Heston, was the man who invented the profession of stuntman. When he arrived in Hollywood, there was nothing like it. You gave a $20 bill and a bottle of whiskey to a cowboy and told him to take a chance on his life. Heston seemed to have misjudged his earning potential. They worked as riding extras for about $3 to $5 a day plus a provided box lunch. A cowboy star's stunt double, according to author Diana Sarah Carey in her book Hollywood Posse, earned her father a raise in his daily riding extra pay from $5 a day to $7.50. There was no concern about safety at the time. In the words of Carey, nearly every guy among them walked with a limp until the phrases gimpy and picture cowboy became synonymous. In 1931, Canute was hired to double for a former University of Southern California football player and studio prop boy who was acting in a Poverty Row serial called Shadow of the Eagle. Canute, who was 6 feet 3 inches tall, was a good physical match for the person who would eventually come to be known as John Wayne. Wayne was duped by Canute, who played a tremendous joke on him, into believing that he was spying on him for management and ostentatiously recorded the actor's on-set infractions in a little black book. However, when Wayne discovered that Canute's behavior was what was referred to as a rib, Wayne found the joke to be amusing and pursued him as a friend. The Depression-era working conditions, which included low pay and a grueling schedule that began before sunrise and ended after dark on many occasions, brought the two men together as well. Wayne and Canute went on to star in a slew of low-budget westerns during the 1930s, and they remained lifelong friends as a result. In addition to Canute's speech patterns, Wayne was reported to have stolen his gait, which he transformed into his own characteristic loping walk. Marion Morrison, the druggist's son from Keokuk, Iowa, went on to become the personification of the American cowboy in the eyes of many across the world. Wayne occasionally disputed that he had modeled a cinematic persona after Canute, but near the end of his life, he did admit that he had purposely adopted one of Canute's mannerisms in his performance. He claimed that when confronted by boisterous wranglers or stuntmen, the normally genial Canute would adopt a half-humorous gleam that gave the image of a steel trap waiting to be released. According to the actor, he adopted that frightening glimmer for usage in man-to-man encounter scenes in various films. Additionally, Canute appeared in those B-Westerns as henchmen and other nasty villains. Canute, according to Wayne, was a lousy actor who frowned, shouted, and snarled throughout his performance as the Heavy, even after Wayne informed him that his own scary glimmer was far more evil. Contrary to popular belief, Canute was a superstar when it came to choreographing stunts, or as they were known in the industry, gags. A technique he developed with Wayne was to orchestrate combat scenes, dramatizing them by employing different camera angles to make a series of phony strikes appear real. Before that, screen fights were sloppily improvised and frequently featured clumsy grappling techniques. Wayne and his adversary in a fight or chase were both played by Canute, who used editing and outfit changes to play two characters in a single scene. When the producers of a 1934 film called 'Neath Arizona Skies, in which Canute was cast as a villain, forgot to hire a second stuntman of the appropriate size for a scene requiring a leap from a horse to a railway handcar followed by a fight, and a leap from the handcar into a goalie, Wayne and Canute took turns double acting for one another. Canute attended a party at the home of Claude Rice, a fishing acquaintance who happened to be a Los Angeles police officer. There, he met Rice's daughter, Minnie Audrea, who worked as a telephone company employee and was just 23 years old. Later that year, in Yuma, Arizona, the couple exchanged vows. A total of 3 children would be born to the couple. Edward was given the nickname Tap, which is short for tapadero, which is a Spanish term for a saddle stirrup hood made of leather. Tap and his younger brother Joe went on to make a name for themselves as stuntmen. Audrea Elaine, also known as Honey, was their younger sister who married a stuntman herself. Stagecoach, a 1939 Western classic directed by John Ford, was John Wayne's first major film performance in which he played the Ringo Kid. Ford was persuaded to hire Canute as a result of the actor's efforts. While working on a proposal for Wayne, Ford requested Canute to think of something that he'd seen while watching Buffalo Bill's Wild West show while he was a youngster. Canute remembered something from the performance that stuck out to him since he was a small child. While an overland stage galloped around the arena, a messenger riding after it primed a gun with one hand by whirling it in the air. The audience had erupted in applause. A ring loop had been added to the rifle as a result of the modification. Canute claimed that he had never seen the trick repeated afterwards. Wayne went on to use it in a number of films and even had rifles that were specifically designed to perform the twirl. A transfer from a galloping horse to another moving object was accomplished by Canute as the world's first stuntman. In the scene he did for Stagecoach, which has been dubbed the most exciting movie stunt ever designed, he demonstrated that ability quite nicely. Canute, dressed in the role of an assaulting native, leaps from a galloping horse to another galloping horse and onto one of the front horses driving a stagecoach at breakneck speed. His fall to the ground occurs between the 6 rushing horses pulling the coach after he is knocked off his feet. After the horses in the coach have passed over him, he is dragged over the ground by his own weight. Later, he mounts a horse with the aid of a main mount and chases after the stagecoach for a second time. Even though Canute anticipated that the stagecoach would be traveling at a speed of 37 miles per hour when he planned the stunt, the coach was really traveling at a speed of 45 miles per hour in the actual scenario. Steven Spielberg actually paid homage to this scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark, which came out in 1981. Canute also persuaded a skeptical John Ford that he could rig a stagecoach full of passengers so that it wouldn't collapse while horses carried it across a raging river ahead of chasing natives. Despite Ford's reservations, after meticulously weighing the coach and all of the performers, as well as gauging the depth of the water, Canute devised a method of using hollow logs as flotation devices, as well as a plan for an underwater cable that would connect to a truck on the other side of the river. When Canutt finished monitoring the construction and installation of the apparatus, he took the wheel and sped the stagecoach and its passengers across the river at breakneck speed. As Clark Gable's stunt double in Gone with the Wind, Canutt rode his horse through a wall of flames while dodging falling burning debris during the Atlanta conflagration sequence. When a horse Canutt was riding rose up and threw itself backward in an equine belly-up technique known as sunfishing while filming another Clark Gable film, the outcome was an extensive injury. This occurred during the filming of the 1940 movie Boomtown. At the end of a long day, Canutt could have thrown himself clear. He was an expert at falling off horses sideways as well as over their heads and rumps, but this time, he claimed he was simply not fast enough. He found himself underneath a 1,200-pound horse with a saddle horn puncturing his stomach as a result of his misfortune. I knew he'd cashed in his chips for the last time when I saw old Yak carried off the set with most of his stuffing trailing behind him, a colleague later recalled. He was back in the game after undergoing extensive surgery, but a portion of his intestines had grown back into a U-shape, which was causing him to suffer painful gastric attacks. When he was at the reins of six horses driving a runaway coach, the situation became even more clear. He tugged on the reins with such force that the adhesion that had formed was broken off, allowing him to cancel the exploratory surgery that had been set for that day. He stated that he would not recommend stagecoach surgery to others, but that it had been successful for him, and that was good enough. Having reached the age of 44, Canutt began contemplating a career change into the role of a second unit director, where he would be responsible for designing and supervising complex action sequences during filming. Soon after, he began training his two sons, Tap and Joe, to take over the stunt work for themselves. The choreographer John Canutt worked on scenes in films such as Spartacus and El Cid that featured armies of extras. The chariot race sequence in the 1959 extravaganza Ben-Hur was the crowning achievement of this new phase in Canutt's professional life. It took 2 years to plan and prepare for the scene, which has long been regarded as one of the best action sequences ever filmed by the industry. The film was a remake of a 1916 black-and-white silent film starring Roman Navarro. There were so many pileups that more than 100 horses were killed during the 1916 chariot race in Italy that the original film had used. Those original producers of the 1916 film gave up and ended up filming it in Culver City close to the MGM studios, though there were still a few pileups that resulted in injuries to both people and horses. That race in the original silent film, which was shot with 18 cameras and took 4 months to stage, was directed by Breezy Eason. After watching the original film, Canutt determined that he could make his version more entertaining while also making it significantly safer, and he revised the screenplay to incorporate more thrills and wrecks than the original. It was part of his plan to place a camera operator in a pit with chariots running over him, as well as to stage a stunt in which one chariot team jumps over another team's wrecked chariot while using a ramp to keep it flying. Ben-Hur, which was released in 1959, was the most expensive film ever made up to that point in time, with a budget of $15 million. The chariots were drawn by four side-by-side horses, which was a lot of work to manage. Roman charioteers controlled their horses using 8 reins, but Canutt devised a harness that allowed him to control 4 horses with only 2 reins, as well as a specific sand and gravel track for them to run on. As part of his design, he devised an undercarriage for the chariots that would allow for far tighter skidding turns than those he'd observed in the silent version. The next year, Canutt traveled to Yugoslavia and purchased more than 100 horses to be divided into 8 teams, allowing shooting to take place throughout the day in shifts in order to avoid overworking the animals. While his son Joe would serve as a stand-in for actor Charlton Heston in the role of Ben-Hur, Heston himself, a talented athlete who enjoyed horses, also held the reins and drove the chariot, as did his on-screen adversary, Irish actor Stephen Boyd. According to Canutt, Heston claimed to have perfected the chariot driving technique but expressed fear about filming the scenario with 7 other teams racing around the set. "Chuck, all you have to do is make sure you stay in the chariot," Canutt said. "I guarantee you'll come out on top of the damn race." In 1967, Canutt added an honorary Academy Award to his collection of trophies, belts, buckles, saddles, and medals from his rodeo career. The award was given to him by Charlton Heston in recognition of his accomplishments as a stuntman and second unit director, as well as for devising safety gear and techniques to make stunt work less dangerous. In 1985, he was honored with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Yakima Canutt's last credited film was Breakheart Pass, which starred Charles Bronson and was released in 1975. After he served as Grand Marshal of the Whitman County Fair in Colfax in 1982, this would mark his final visit to the Evergreen State. Canutt, who was 90 at the time of his death, died of cardiac arrest on the 24th of May 1986 in a North Hollywood hospital. In the wake of a remarkable rodeo career, he rose to become the world's most famous stuntman, widely credited with inventing the modern stuntman's profession, making it safer for both people and animals, and thrilling movie audiences for more than half a century. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star review and don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss a new episode. Doing so really helps the show to grow and to expand to a new audience, so any help that you can give in that regard will be greatly appreciated. Sources for this episode include IMDb.com, NationalCowboyMuseum.org, the Hollywood Walk of Fame website, WesternClippings.com, TheWildWest.org, HistoryLink.org, The Calgary Daily Herald, The Hollywood Posse, The Story of a Gallop Band of Horsemen Who Made Movie History by Diana Sarah Carey, My Rodeo Years, Memoir of a Bronc Rider's Path to Hollywood Fame by Yakima Canutt with John Crawford, The Seattle Times, and Stuntman, The Autobiography of Yakima Canutt by Yakima Canutt with Oliver Drake. Thank you for listening to Episode 130, Stuntman Yakima Canutt. Episode 131 will be released next week. A special thank you goes out to Alan Hirsch for providing the music for the podcast. If you have any questions about the show, please contact historyoftheevergreenstatepod@gmail.com. Thank you once again for listening to another episode of the History of the Evergreen State podcast. And until next time, I'm your host and producer, John C.
There's peace on the Skokomish, on the Queets, and on the whole. There's calm on the Nisqually, born of ageless ice and snow. A land that nature loves so much, she stays the whole year round. I trade a royal palace for a shack on Puget Sound. There's Chimicum and Stillicum, where spouts the gooey duck. The singing still a Guamish and the swirling Skookumchuck. And Moclips and Copalis, where the razor clams abound. A little bit of heaven is a shack on Puget Sound. A little bit of heaven is a shack on Puget Sound.